What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
High noon here on Jones and Keefe as day two of the 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fun Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance rolls on. If you're watching twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, we're up over $3.5 million, $3,584,856 at this point. Donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, or text any amount to KCancer56512. We got some states to fill in here on day two. They reset that, Keith.
Oh, they reset it for day two.
We had some different states on there all checked.
Understood.
But they did reset that. We're starting over again, trying to check every box.
We're a little light, big sky country. We've got to get Montana and the Dakotas going. But other than that, it looks pretty good.
That is true.
You had an update, though?
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, please.
A special shout out, Adam from Accurate Collision in Everett, who is Wiggy's friend. He's an associate of Wiggy's. $2,500 he donated. So thank you very much to Adam from Accurate Collision in Everett.
Wow.
Yeah,
Great job. Great job by Adam. Wiggy's got a lot of associates.
He does.
As I've come to realize here over the years. Perhaps one is Dr. Kevin Haggis, the Chief Scientific Officer at Dana-Farber, joining us here on day two. Dr. Haggis, thanks for sitting with us here for a little bit.
Thanks for having me. This is a highlight of my year every year.
You said you're a veteran, right? You've done Nesson, you've done WEEI, so you're a pro when it comes to this. What can you tell us about what the Chief Scientific Officer's day-to-day responsibilities are at Dana-Farber?
It's a very broad job. I do manage day-to-day operations of research, like which space our researchers get to use, grants and contracts, things like that. We also oversee things like strategic planning. Where are we going to invest our research dollars every year? What's the next best thing in cancer research? And we do this really as a team of people who are in the leadership at Dana-Farber.
What can you tell us about the importance of the clinical trials? I feel like most of the guest patients that we've had on are all in some sort of clinical trial and something that they couldn't have received even just a couple of years ago.
That's right. Clinical trials are important for a couple different reasons. One, you want to establish the safety of a new investigational drug. And so, for example, many of those new drugs will be tested in what we call preclinical models. These are typically animals. But we're still never sure about what the safety will be in a person. You don't want to give someone a medicine that's going to cure their cancer but make them much sicker, for example. And so clinical trials are very important for that. And then, as you mentioned, it's those patients that have moved beyond all of the available therapies. What can we give them in an experimental sense that may have a big impact on their lives? These things have to be tested in patients before we roll them out to the broader community.
And that's where a lot of this money can go. Again, over $3.5 million. Please donate toll free 877-738-1234 or text KCancer to 56512 to give any amount. You mentioned part of your day to day responsibility is figuring out where to invest in cancer research and what are the most promising ways to do that. How do you make that decision, and what are the most promising things to invest in these days?
Well, we make that decision largely by looking at the overall environment of cancer research. So, for example, what's hot right now? KRAS inhibitors. KRAS is one of the most commonly mutated cancer genes. We've known about it for 50 years. We've never had a drug to treat a cancer that has a mutation in that gene until the last 5 years. So that is hot right now because we have a tsunami of genes new drugs coming into the clinic. Dana-Farber has started the first in the world clinic devoted entirely to evaluating the activity of KRAS inhibitors. And that's both in a clinical setting, so phase one clinical trials, and also in a research setting as well. So in my opinion, KRAS inhibitors are the most exciting thing in the clinic right now.
Are you concerned at all with some of the federal funding issues, if that could get in the way of some of this research?
Absolutely. The biggest thing with what's going on in federal funding right now is the uncertainty. We have a lot of executive orders coming out that somehow impinge upon our ability to fund research, either whether it's we can't get grants or the grants are coming in at lower amounts. And that causes a lot of uncertainty for us. And so things like monies that come in through the Jimmy Fund Telethon make a huge impact in times when federal funding is at an uncertain rate.
Well, and look, I mean, hopefully this can make up a portion of that. I know it probably can't make up all of that, but hopefully this can make up a portion of that PEMBAS challenge as well, things of that nature. So again, you can donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, or visit jimmyfund.org. Research, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. What are some of the complications in what has it take as long as it does?
Yeah, well, research, if you'll allow me to use a sports analogy, look at who's leading the league in hitting right now. The person is hitting .333, one-third. So the two-thirds failure rate. Research is not much different than that. We fail a lot of the time. The difference is that instead of our failure taking 1 second, it might take 1 year. And after that, we're starting over from scratch. And so research is an iterative process that takes time. There's a lot of failure before you get to a success. And that's why research seems like it takes a really long time to get to an endpoint. And as I said, we've known about KRAS as a cancer gene for 50 years, and it wasn't until 5 years ago that we started to see new drugs coming into the clinic. That's a very long time in anybody's standard, 4 decades or more. And so that's what all research is like. And so that's why, because of the rate at which we fail relative to the rate that we succeed, research is very expensive as well. And so in uncertain times of federal funding, philanthropic funds like those that come in through the telethon make a really big impact on us.
Well, you mentioned like the two-thirds failure. So how rewarding is it when you are there and you do see the breakthroughs and all the advancements over the years?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyone who plays golf knows.
Yeah, right. That, probably get that good shot down the middle.
It's that one shot down the middle.
Yep.
And as a researcher, that one aha moment keeps you coming back. After all those times that you have done an experiment and it didn't give you the result that you expected, or you didn't make a breakthrough, you get that one, and then you're ready for the next year. That's how it works.
Now, you've been at Dana-Farber since 2020. You were at Beth Israel prior to that. What sort of advancements have you just seen, even just being at Dana-Farber in the last 5 years in the field?
Well, I think the things that have come along really quickly are related to immune therapy. Things like cancer vaccines have come along really fast. Things like cell-based therapy, so these are CAR-T therapies that are used to cure kids with certain forms of child leukemia. So I would say that immunotherapy is the thing that has really progressed very quickly in my time at Dana-Farber. And I think that there'll be lots of new things coming out in the next 5 years as well. It's a really exciting time to be a cancer researcher.
Yeah, and I guess just to put sort of an exclamation point on the end of this, you see 3.5 million and more coming in, still have the rest of the day, still have a Red Sox game tonight. How important and where is this money going for people that are picking up the phone right now?
Well, as you mentioned before, I think supporting early stage clinical trials is a really great way for this money to impact patients directly. I think that going into strategic initiatives in terms of research, that might be more immunotherapy, it might be KRAS inhibitors, it might be something else. Early stage research is where Dana-Farber excels. We are great at clinical trials. We are outstanding at early stage research. And so a lot of this money would go to support those early stage studies that are, again, in an uncertain funding climate. We need that extra money to get those studies going.
Well, Dr. Haggis, we appreciate you stopping by yet again on the telethon. Thanks for all that you do.
Thanks
and,
very much.
And helping Thanks with with that number over there, because it's instrumental in this telethon. So thank you so much. 877-738-1234 is how you donate toll-free. You can also text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. It's been a while since I reminded you. You can sign up monthly today as a donor, and you will be entered to win an exclusive Fenway Park tour, including behind-the-scenes look at WEEI and Nesson Studios. The winner will be selected this week, and by joining Jimmy's team, which is the monthly giving program, your meaningful gift will be charged on your credit card each month. It's an easy way to support the work of Dana-Farber all year long. You can do so again by calling 877-738-1234 or go online, jimmyfund.org, and sign up today. We will roll on here today on day two of the 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. After a quick trending with Nick, we'll come back with Kerrigan Nelson.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Day two, 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance rolls on. We're up over $3.5 million, closing in on hopefully surpassing last year's total really at any point, just shy of $4 million, which is a great number. We're hoping to surpass that as part of the $74 million raised by this telethon over the last 22 years. Your ways to do that, 877-738-1234, online, jimmyfund.org, or you can text to give any amount by texting KCANCER to 56512. Now, Keith,
yes,
we are joined by some professionals here. On the radio telethon,
including a social media influencer.
I know that you're a little shy about this, but Kerrigan Nelson is joining us here from Portsmouth, Rhode Island, with her brother Sawyer and also Dr. Catherine Janeway. Thanks for joining us here yet again on the telethon, all of you. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Great to be here.
Now, you said again, you've been part of the telethon.
Yes.
You have sang the national anthem at Fenway Park. So what is your experiences with this telethon and being front and center at Fenway Park, singing the anthem been like?
I mean, it was just an incredible honor. It's a song that you want to do justice, and just being asked to sing and be a part of it was truly a really cool experience. I mean, I was very nervous, especially before I went on, but then I started singing and the crowd was just so lovely and everyone was so sweet. And then of course the telethon, you meet a bunch of incredible people and you get to share your story and then talk about Dana-Farber. And I've been fighting now for over 6 years and I'm still here. And that, I mean, of course, is because of Dana-Farber.
I know you're very humble about it, but your brother was talking you up and saying you have a lot of followers on social media. You've been sort of documenting your journey. What has that been like? What inspired you to do that, first of all? And then what has sort of the reaction been to it?
Yeah. I mean, right when I was diagnosed, it was back in 2019, and I told myself, you know, I can go a couple ways about this journey. And I told myself, you know, I have cancer. Cancer doesn't have me, and I'm not going to let it define who I am as a person. And, you know, I can't control that I have cancer, but I can control how I treat others and how I deal with my journey. And so I decided just to try and make, you know, as much of a positive out of it as possible. And I just decided to start sharing my journey. And I'm a singer as well. And although the cancer has moved to my lungs, you know, I try to say, you know, just keep doing what you can every single day. And it's been an incredible experience. So I've been posting on Instagram as well as YouTube and TikTok.
Now, you used the word incredible. That's the word you used to describe Dr. Janeway.
Yes.
As well. She used it back to you as well, Kerrigan. But what can you tell us about treating young adults at Dana-Farber?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when people envision cancer, they often think about older people. And thanks to, you know, things like this event, they also picture, you know, really young people. But they're actually young adults like Kerrigan who get cancer. And I'm a sarcoma specialist. And sarcoma is one of those diseases that young adults tend to get. And, you know, one of the amazing things about treating young adults is you really get to develop a relationship with them one-on-one and with their family, because they're often surrounded by and supported by their family, like Sawyer, who's here sitting next to me. It's a great privilege to be part of people's lives at that time, at that like really important developmental time that we share together. One amazing thing about Dana-Farber is that we have a lot of flexibility We have a pediatric clinic and we have an adult clinic, both with sarcoma specialties. And we're able to bring the patient to wherever they need to be to get the treatment they need to have. And in fact, Kerrigan has been on clinical trials in the pediatric clinic and in the medical sarcoma clinic. So, you know, that's the type of thing that we are able to do with the funds that, like the funds that you raise through fundraisers like this. Without that, we wouldn't really be able to have that kind of flexibility to make the clinical situation match the patient.
What can you tell us about her treatment plan specifically, sort of where she started and, yeah. and where she's at now? And obviously, Kerrigan, feel free to weigh in,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. So, I mean, Kerrigan's a fighter. She's amazing. And she also likes to give back. And she's actually been on 3 clinical trials. She's on her 3rd clinical trial. And, you know, of course, we're doing that because we're, you know, bringing the latest medications to the cancer that she's fighting. But also, I hope you don't mind me bragging about you, Kerrigan, but every time we've talked about clinical trials, you said, yeah, and I want to do this because I want to help people in the future.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely, because it helps science.
Sawyer, what's it been like watching your sister fight this?
I mean, it's been really tough. I mean, I think anyone just seeing your sister go through something like this, it's been absolutely brutal. One of the things that I'll say about cancer, though, is it connects you with some great people. Like when you're part of the cancer community, Dr. Janeway being one of them, of course. You know, we always say, and we say this all the time, that Kerrigan would not be here if it wasn't for the work that you and your team do. And I actually truly believe that. I really do. So that's why it's so important, you know, events like this, fundraisers, making sure that, you know, we're raising funds for things like the clinical trials that Kerrigan's a part of. But I would just say she's really an inspiration. It's inspiring. Like the things that Kerrigan goes through to stay here, like she puts a really, you know, when you see Kerrigan, she's always extremely positive. But like seeing behind the scenes, like what she goes through, it's pretty inspiring. And it makes anything that I'm dealing with in life, you know, seem like nothing. So
no,
I mean,
sweet.
it's that's just, you know, she's just an amazing person and I'm privileged to be her brother.
Well, there's lots of reasons to donate. There are many there at 877-738-1234, online jimmyfund.org, and you can text K-Cancer to give any amount to 56512. Now, reading about, you mentioned a couple of different times that you're a singer.
Yes.
So beyond the anthem, what sort of music do you like? What do you like to sing and perform?
All different types of music. I mean, country, and then I do like Miley Cyrus. She's my girl. Love her. I sing some Valerie by Amy Winehouse. All over the place, honestly. Like there's not one genre that I'm really stuck to.
Now, it says here arts and crafts is a passion of yours as well.
Yes.
And you even have your own like merchandise. Can you tell us about this?
Yes, I do. In the Jimmy Fund too. They all wear my merch. It's incredible. So I have this, it's a butterfly, and like in the middle of the butterfly is a cancer ribbon, and almost all the Jimmy Fund staff wear it. The Jimmy Fund too, I do have to say, they, just everyone there, you're going to hear me say the word incredible a bunch of times, but you're not just a patient there. They look at you as a whole person, and you know, of course, they're going to look at your medical journey, but they also want to know about your singing and your upcoming events and what you like to do and what makes you happy and what's going to get you there. And especially Dr. Janeway as well. She'll know. She knows that I love to travel and go to national parks, and she wants to make it happen and be flexible when she can be. And I'm really grateful for that.
Dr. Janeway, how have the clinical trials advanced treatments for Kerrigan's diagnosis?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, the only way that we can really bring new treatments to cancer patients is through clinical trials. Clinical trials are, you know, a pretty significant part of what we do at Dana-Farber and in the Jimmy Fund Clinic. And we really need funding like the fundraising that you're doing here in order to provide those clinical trials. The whole process of sort of starting up a clinical trial, you actually don't get paid for it until it's actually kind of underway. And so you need some sort of seed funding, so to speak. And in addition, Kerrigan has a pretty rare cancer. It's called osteosarcoma. It only affects about 800 people a year in the United States. And so when we're doing those clinical trials, we're often doing them not just at Dana-Farber, but collaborating with all of our colleagues. Sometimes we run them through Dana-Farber, but make them available outside of Dana-Farber. You can imagine that adds paperwork, time, more staff. And so the type of fundraising that we do here is really particularly important for rare cancers like what Kerrigan has.
What's your day-to-day like now, Kerrigan? How often is treatment?
This is a new protocol that I'm on. And in the beginning, it's a little bit more hectic and more of a regimen. So I've been going, I just got out of the hospital yesterday, to be honest.
Okay, all right.
I was inpatient for, something else. Just had some stuff going on. It's all good. I'm glad to be here today. But I think it was like three times last week or...
Yeah.
I don't know.
3 days, I think, last week.
Yes.
And then this week, 2 days.
Yes.
And then I think we see you next week once.
Yes.
So it's a couple days a week, actually, and then it'll get a little bit better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're happy you're here today as well. You're going to the game tonight with your brother, correct?
Of course, yes.
Nice.
The whole family.
The whole family's going.
Yes. Yes.
Great. So you got your jersey. This is from when you sang the anthem, is that right?
Yes.
You got the Jimmy Fund jersey on.
Yes.
We were talking to your brother beforehand. I think he made a very savvy move, Keith.
I do too.
He's got a Red Sox jersey, no name.
Smart.
Because with this organization,
they're changing left and right.
You never know. You invest in a jersey.
You can't go wrong.
It is a timeless jersey.
I thought maybe I could put temporary names on it every year.
Yeah, that's true.
Whoever's doing the best and whoever I think is going to be here a year from now, I'll put that name on the back.
Definitely.
I think that's a smart move.
That's a smart move.
Smart family. So look, we appreciate you guys coming on. Again, I know you're no strangers to the telethon. Kerrigan, Sawyer, Dr. Janeway as well. Thanks for coming on and helping us raise some money for day two of this telethon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, and thanks to everyone out there.
Well, we want everybody out there, great generosity, to continue to donate toll-free at 877-738-1234, jimmyfund.org, or you can text to give any amount. KCancer 56512 is how you can raise that
money.
Sometimes that's the easiest way to do it.
We're now up to $3,615,247.
How about that?
Pretty good. Excellent stuff.
Well, thank you guys again. We do appreciate you coming on here. And I'm happy to see that tote board continue to update. While we are awaiting Tom E. Curran here, NBC Sports Boston, we do have some top donors to single out here. Robin Karen Hale, we spent a lot of time talking about the $1 million that was matched through great generosity there. Five Mass Money. Now, I heard at the tail end of Greg's show.
Yeah, they called in.
I did not hear the figure, and I should have singled this out earlier.
It was staggering.
Almost $480,000 from Fine Mass Money, which is incredible. BJ's Charitable Foundation, it's $250,000, but it's actually higher than that, given $100,000 donated on top of that. I think they're matching some roundups as well. Ernie Bach, $50,000 plus yesterday, and we did single this out, an anonymous World War II veteran donating another $100,000.
Incredible.
Well. Which is unbelievable. Look, those are big figures.
Yes.
Not everybody can donate in that capacity, which we understand. But a dollar here, $5 there really truly does go a long way, adding to the $3,615,000 that have been raised thus far. Actually, $615,247, to be precise, here on day two of the 23rd annual WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon, presented by Arbella Insurance. Well, we were talking a little Patriots earlier on the program today. Still a Tom E. Tuesday with Tom E. Curran of NBC Sports Boston. He joins us now here on WEEI. And, well, Tom, we've been talking through a few different things. What struck me yesterday, and we're not as up on the full news cycle, so fill in any gaps if I've missed anything. I believe Ryan Cowden either already spoke or is speaking today as well. The answer yesterday from Elliot Wolf about being willing to move a first or second round pick for a player that could help the team. Your thoughts on that, and specifically Wolf being the one to deliver the message?
Well, he was asked the question, so I would start with that, not to dispute that they want it out there. I think clearly, Adam, that's the main thing. The Patriots are unblinking in the notion that, hey, we'll do whatever we need to improve the team. the notion of a trade was first raised. Would you be willing to make a trade? And then Phil said first or a second, and he said, sure. But I wonder if that hypothetical would be tempered a little bit. Because the more you think about it, they have alluded to the fact that the $60 million in cap space, they're going to need to, and it's not BS. They have to roll some of it forward to next year because they're already over the cap for next year, and they're going to presumably bring in more decent players next year as well because they didn't do that great in free agency this year. It's part of the reason there's $60 million sitting there. So they are going to do that, but I do think that Wolf's interest is also in trying to convey not that Red Sox, hey, we're in on everybody type thing, but in an urgency. We're going to do whatever we can to get better this year. Last year we heard at this time and prior to this time last year, foundational, build. We'll see how it goes. It's not about this year. It's about down the road. And they've kind of at least switched their mentality and their words choice. So to me, that is definitely there. But the more I think about it, hypothetically, say you give up what ended up being the 13th overall pick, if you gave up a first for Micah Parsons. And you have to pay Micah Parsons $46 million a year and however much money. And you just released Kyle Duggar and his $18 million. And in 2 years, you're going to have to pay Gonzalez and you're going to have to pay Drake May soon thereafter their money. It can really sneak up on you. I guess the question I'm posing is, to what end? Are you taking a shortcut in 2025 to add a player who's really friggin' good to bring you from 7 or 8 wins to 9 or 10? And now you've kind of taken away your first-round pick for 2026, and you've saddled yourself with a massive, one of the biggest contracts in the league.
Yeah, I guess
I've been looking at the $60 million, Rich.
Yeah.
I've been looking at the $60 million and go, let's spend it, you idiots. And then I started to think about it a little bit more today. What do you think?
So I'd be in favor of it for the right player, because I just think if you take your draft pick, if he's half as good as Micah Parsons, you have you hit on that pick. And I think eventually the great, great players are going to get paid a ton of money. You know, we looked at it was weird when Tom Brady didn't always take top money, but you're not going to get athletes to do that or football players to do that year in and year out. So to me, that's the ultimate good problem to have. If you have what you think is a top-end quarterback, cornerback, and pass rusher, like, okay, great. Figure it out in the other areas of the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, do you feel like any of those guys that have been discussed, Micah Parsons, Terry McLaurin, Trey Hendrickson, do you think any of them are even going to end up changing teams?
I would say Hendrickson would be the most likely candidate because they're actually talking about dealing him. I don't think that Jerry Jones, given his embrace of drama and his acknowledgement, really, in the past week or so of, I love the drama, good, bad, indifferent. I don't mind bad publicity. It would take away his most compelling player. I don't think Dak Prescott's a very fascinating guy. Your most interesting player is Micah Parsons. So why would you take away somebody who's good at the cash register for you? They'll figure it out. He's too good to let go. Terry McLaurin sounded like it was intimated by Jaden Daniels a little bit that things might be closing in down there. So your only possibility is Hendrickson. It's a 30-plus-year-old pass rusher. You'd have to give up $30 million a year for him. I don't dispute, and I don't think that enough folks are ringing the bell about how shallow the Patriots' pass rush is and how much it's based on hope as opposed to hard proof that these guys are going to be good at rushing the passer. So I do think that there is a need for a pass rusher, but I don't know if Hendrickson at his age and price would be the right guy and the cost to extract him.
Well, what's your understanding? You mentioned his name earlier. What's your understanding to Kyle Duggar and his spot on the roster and why he is now playing with like scout team level and second and third team level players deep into preseason games? What's your understanding with Kyle Duggar and how it's gotten to this point?
He just don't move around so good no more. that's the long and short of it. We saw it last year. He was a liability, a literal liability for the Patriots defensively, unfortunately, and we attributed it all to injury because it wasn't in the very distant past that he was a borderline Pro Bowl player. But coming back this camp and this offseason, I'm sure that Mike Vrabel and his staff have looked at this guy even as he comes back from offseason surgery and said, yeah, it's not getting any better. And it's a large contract. We have players who might fit our scheme better as opposed to a big thumping safety. And it's not working. So to me, I look at it and he's just done nothing, unfortunately for him, to stop the cavalcade of negativity. I mean, when I said it a couple weeks ago, who would you keep an eye on Winnie Wendugar? It was more just based on he's an average safety, or at least, but he's being paid like an elite one. Now he's not an average safety, and he's kind of being paid like an elite one. So you can't have that.
Are you surprised that he's even still on the team? Just because they did make so many changes and so many of the veteran players moved on, whether it was just not re-signs or whether it was, you know, sort of retirements or whatever. They a lot of changeover, and they knew what kind of player he was. They knew what kind of contract he had. Are you surprised he's even made it this far?
No, because he should be good. It was such a rapid decline. It's really only 1 year of suck. Okay. So to me, he should be a good player for them right now. And they had to confirm that he is in decline, and maybe it's a temporary decline, and maybe he bounces back someplace else, but he's going to be a hard guy to move via trade because of the size of the contract, unless the Patriots take some of the money back with them. But as I said, I don't know if I said it to you guys. I don't think I did, but how would you like to be Elliot Wolf or whoever has to walk into Kraft and say, yeah, you know, we gave a 4-year, $54 million contract to Kyle last year, $18 million, a beautiful home in the Hamptons. We are going to basically burn in a fire pit behind out on the practice fields because of this.
Well, that's why, again,
that's why
I was surprised he's the guy being like, yeah, we're trading a first or second round pick. But you already answered that. He was asked the question, so fair. He answered that. You mentioned it's been a year of suck for Kyle Duggar. It's been a few practices of suck for Steph Diggs. I don't know if you feel like that's too harsh. Karen Garigian really detailed all this late last week, where he's gone catchless in a bunch of these full team sessions. I know you and Phil cover this as well. What's the trajectory with Steph Diggs in that his fit in the first team offense?
Yeah, Phil was out in Minnesota this week, and I thought he did a good job on our podcast kind of relating what his understanding is of the situation and how the team is viewing it. We talked a little bit last week about it just hasn't been as electric as it felt like it was going to be during the mini camp off-season trainings and the early portion of camp, where he was making catches like, oh, yeah, that's a number one looking receiver. And then it's kind of just faded away. And last week we saw a drop in one practice to end the practice and just not a lot of contributions. And we started to, especially with the Diana Rossini conversation, in which he intimated that, geez, I don't know if I'm going to be ready for week one, that we might see some smoke there. And in talking to Phil, you know, he said that his understanding is that they're happy with where Diggs is. They want to slow play it a little bit more. He's proven what he can. There is nobody who is feeling as if he is yet a pain in the ass. It has not been a problem. So I think that does look too bad for Stephon Diggs if his reputation precedes him and we allow ourselves to entertain the possibility he might be a pain in the ass. So if he feels bad about that, sorry that we speculated that might be the case. But we're here to at least acknowledge that so far, ass not having pain.
That's a good sign.
That's a great sign.
Overall, though, Tom, how do you feel about the first team offense when you take into account the last preseason game as well as some of the practice reports the last few days?
I think it's pretty okay. It's funny. We talked about this last night on BST for a little bit, and Andrew Callahan was in. And the one thing that, yes, it's friggin' annoying to see that every time you put a scoreboard on and refs on the field and people on the sidelines and people in the stands, Drake May F's up. Doesn't matter whether it's the stadium practice where he had a pick ricochet off Diggs on the first drive and threw a nonsensical pick to Alex Austin on the last one. Doesn't matter if it's last week's fumble or this week's airmailing. That is friggin' annoying, because I'm down there at practice going, hey, thumbs up, oh, full speed ahead, Drake looks great. And then
right, exactly. He comes,
it's like the singing frog from Looney Tunes. Hello, my dad. Yeah, you guys don't remember that.
I know.
I get that reference.
I get it.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Yeah. So,
oh, ragtime down.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that one. So yeah, he's the singing frog for me. Every time he gets out there, he doesn't sing. It's annoying. But at least I will say this. and I do think this is important, at least he knows where he's supposed to go with the ball. And I know Dan Orlovsky did a breakdown, and it got some attention, rightfully so. Everything should get attention because the kid should be scrutinized. But I'm not seeing a guy who's patting the ball, looking around, you know, retreating. He seems decisive. So to me, that's not something you have to set off, you know, sparklers for. But I'm not seeing a guy who has doesn't know whether to poop or go blind. He knows what he's doing. He just sometimes is put it this way. Put on your seatbelts. He's 22. He's got a lot of skill, and sometimes that skill is going to cause him to do dumb things. So it's going to take a minute, and there's going to be some bumps and curbs that get hit.
Okay. Tommy Curran breaking it all down. You can check him out, NBC Sports Boston, Quick Slants, BST, Early Edition, all that good stuff here on WEEI on Tuesdays with us on Jones and Keefe on Thursdays with WEEI Afternoons. Thanks for taking some time here, Tom. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Great work today. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
Tommy Curran joining us here on day two of the 23rd annual WEEI NESN Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. We've been giving out the toll-free number all day long, and for the next 15 minutes.
That's right. Get in there now.
Right up until 1 o'clock, no better time to do it. Dan and Kerry Lyons are going to be matching all gifts up to $25,000. So get in there. Double the money for the next 15 minutes. Toll free, 877-738-1234. You can donate online, jimmyfund.org, or text to give any amount to K-Cancer 56512, other way around, rather, 56512, text K-Cancer there. Double your money. Big thanks to Dan and Kerry Lyons, matching up to $25,000 until 1 o'clock. We encourage you to do that. We'll continue to update the tote board, and I think we'll be able to do that with our next guest, TJ Busey from Apple.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
We'll be next. Jones and Keefe back. 23rd annual WEEI NESN Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. You see the tote board there. $3,615,247. We're going to add to that momentarily. A couple of reminders here. A $10,000 gift has just come in from Rockport Mortgage. So they are on the top donors list. I will be sure to mention those again, but big thanks there to everybody at Rockport Mortgage for the $10,000 gift that just came in. Another reminder as well that all money here up until 1 p.m., so 10 more minutes, will be matched up to $25,000 by Dan and Kerry Lyons. So continue to match at 877-738-1234. Continue to donate, rather. JimmyFund.org, and you can text 56512. Text K-Cancer there to give any amount.
Jones, our first guest in the day, almost 2 days that we've been doing it, that brought a giant check. Mm-hmm. They brought a giant check, so this mm-hmm. is great news. I want to say we hit the $25,000 match. Keep calling and donating, by the way. But thanks to Applebee's, look at the check behind Jones. $58,869. That is tremendous. That is very exciting. So thank you very much for bringing that. I love a prop as well.
I do love a prop as well.
It photographs well.
So you see the giant check. That is donated from all Massachusetts and Rhode Island locations of Applebee's. TJ Busey is here from Applebee's. He's the general manager at the Millbury Applebee's. Been there for 10 years. TJ, thanks for coming by and joining us here on the telethon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, your location raised almost $3,000. $2,851 was raised. How was that money raised at your location?
Really fighting to push our servers, you know, to really get into it and really think about what the Jimmy Fund's for. And we talked about it every single day, kind of drilled it in, and a lot of them really just kind of pulled together and fought each other to make as much money as possible. And between bake sales and different little items and contests we did each day, we were able to get to that.
What was the reaction like around all the stores as you guys were sort of like getting together and like, you know, pitting each other a little bit, competition? But how was that?
A few of us, I mean, the GMs that we're friends with, you know, we're all fighting against each other and have like a little group chat, like, oh, this is what I did today. This is, and my store just kind of ended up on nice. Top almost every day, but it was nice to be on that top and be able to push it.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, just beyond the money that's raised, there's a lot of shared experiences, right, with the staff and all the individuals. You know, we say this all the time, and it does sound cliche, but it's true. I mean, cancer touches everyone's lives. Everyone has had some experience. So what sort of stories have come up with your work staff, the people at that location that you've kind of found out over time?
I mean, with the staff, there hasn't been, I mean, everyone has kind of a touch on cancer. I mean, between parents, things like that. Me personally, I touch back to my grandfather who passed when I was younger, and my wife's aunt who is suffering from brain cancer currently, and kind of really to push each other and kind of bring that camaraderie in and kind of join together to be able to support the Jimmy Fund and what they do, to even if it extends, you know, to find that research that finally cures cancer and be able to give someone a second chance on life or whatever it may be.
It is kind of an easy sell too, right? You have people coming into the Applebee's, they know you're doing Jimmy Fund. It's such a name that rings out all across New England. It really, I mean, the United States, I mean, you look at the map here, like people everywhere know about it. So it is a pretty easy thing to sell.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and when we do our Jimmy Fund, we try to kind of make it a little fun for the guests that are coming in, and all of them kind of, all the guests love that we do it. I get so many comments about it, like, oh my God, not every restaurant does it, right? And we try to be on the top of the list where we're giving back to the community and supporting and whatever we can do, especially with Jimmy Fund, but other events too, that, you know, really give back to the community and help people.
Well, Jones and I were actually at a Rhode Island Applebee's long ago.
We were. Yeah, we were at the Greg Hill Road Show, and yep. we were chasing the night. We went.
I had two giant Long Island iced teas. I'll tell you, fantastic. Maybe the best thing on the menu.
I've never seen one go down so fast.
Wow, was that good.
Two go down so
fast. Yeah, well.
Big shout out
there.
After
the first one.
To Applebee's, the Millbury store, raising almost $3,000 this year total from all Massachusetts and Rhode Island locations. You see it behind me, $58,869. Who's with you, by the way, today, TJ?
So Eleanor, who's our market president, Katie, who is my area director, and then Lori, who's the head of marketing for our region. And, you know, every one of them plays part in pushing everybody to raise as much money as possible. But, you know, big support from them and to really support us in raising the money, you know.
We thank all of you for coming out. I see here it's almost over $630,000 raised by the Massachusetts and Rhode Island location since 2014. So we really appreciate it. TJ Busey, excellent work. Big number there.
Yes,
we continue to update
you.
The tote board. Continue to donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, jimmyfund.org, and you can text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. As we roll on here on day two, 23rd annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. We'll come back. We'll check in with Tracy Ryle, nurse manager, pediatric oncology for the Jimmy Fund.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.